Question session continued. This is the end of the recording. Hope you enjoyed it. Additional copies of the tape may be obtained by contacting us at ARM55 Palen, P-A-L-E-N, Road number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. Thanks for listening. God bless. This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry. Your speaker is Vin Lewis. A little background on this tape might be helpful and appropriate. In December of 1992, Jerry Matatix, who is also, as I believe you would know, a Catholic evangelist and apologist and director of Biblical Foundations, invited me to his location, that is Front Royal, Virginia, for purposes of co-producing various different products, including several tapes. During our first day of joint conference, we allowed certain other people to listen to what we said and ask questions. During one of those sessions, a woman asked a question concerning Catholic education. I had mentioned to Jerry that I had wished very much to bring this issue up in the form of a more formal debate. Mainly, can the Catholic college, the Catholic high school, the Catholic grammar school, the Catholic so-called educational institution, unquote, justify its existence? And when this woman asked the question from the audience, Jerry suggested, and of course I certainly complied, that at that point I should give my view on why the Catholic educational system is no longer Catholic nor justifiable. And with that in mind, you are now in the public library of Front Royal, Virginia, in December of 1992, listening to my answer to this question. I hope it's thought-provoking. I hope you enjoy the tape, the answer, question, etc. Thank you for listening.
Mentioned a little while back that you were going to give us your views on the Catholic educational system.
Go, do it.
Here's your mandate.
Absolutely.
Okay. I believe that the Catholic educational system, if it ever did any good, certainly does not justify its own existence today. And I believe this for a whole bunch of reasons, but they all really come down to two things. One is, what it does good is not unique, but what it does bad cannot be achieved by any other institution. In other words, what you do when you concentrate something under the name Catholic is you allow parents, in good faith, to turn their children over to surrogate parents, thinking that they're going to be taught the faith. This concentrates the effect of one evil teacher massively. Because of our own sinful inclination, we have this desire to want to hear people who tell us it's okay to sin. I mean, you know, I do too. I want to hear that. I remember once being in a car with someone and said to me, do you really want a wishy-washy God who just ignores everything and puts you in heaven? I said, of course I do. That's exactly what I want. What are you joking? I want Mr. Rogers. That's what I want. I don't want the God who is. Unfortunately, I'm not in charge. I have to submit to the reality. But if they asked me, it'd be Mr. Rogers. It'd be Phil Donahue. Everything would be amorphous. Everybody would get to heaven. It'd be no problems. Okay. So, the point I'm trying to make is if you have one bad Catholic teacher in the seventh grade, the influence that that teacher has is massive compared to the other, say, first, second, third, fourth grade teachers, because the students will always remember that to throw them up against the parents. Number two, I think that any form of education like that, whether it's public or private, tends to somewhat sever the relationship between the child and the parent. No matter what happens, ultimately a teacher is going to say something slightly differently than a parent or a little bit of different emphasis, or the teacher is going to be so afraid of saying such a thing that it's going to become what they call a value-free education. And you know, you're not even going to say like, well, you have to come with your, you know, with your shoelaces tied because, well, daddy doesn't pay up with the shoelaces tied, well, gee whiz, and the parents won't even, the teacher won't even say that. So the point I'm trying to make is I think it puts a barrier between, which isn't, again, if it's good, it's no problem. It can be done by everyone. It can be done by the person on the street and the crossing guard and the policeman. But if it's bad, it's done uniquely because it's a Catholic authority system driving a wedge between child and parent. Number three, I think it really leaves out God. I think, again, there's this paradox as I keep pointing out. But as I point out to everybody all the time, which really bothers me a great deal when they say things like, I don't have your learning, I don't have your background, and I say, well, how do you think I got it? And they said, well, you know, I did a lot of studies. I said, not really. I just said, God, okay, you know, what do I need to know? Give it to me. God will give you what you need to know. God will put the right people in your path. Guaranteed. Now, somebody said to me once, well, what happens if he's on an airplane and it crashes? And I said, a plane can't crash without God's permission. The guy's going to get there. So therefore, if you want to learn, you will learn. You'll be put in touch with the right people at the right times. As you see, you know, like I consider Jerry's call, and that's all I'm providential. I consider people I've met through various different networking situations providential. I consider I've learned a lot from them. I hope I've been beneficial for them. And I look and I say, like a very good friend of mine, a guy named Bill Kinesny, he says he doesn't understand why he and his wife have been at the crossroads of American Catholicism, the best part. Why he's met, he feels, every big name, good big name, significant, real, honest-to-goodness Catholic in America in his lifetime. He can't understand it. I can understand it. The man's a living saint. And God said, hey, I just put my saints together. You know, St. Bonaventure didn't go to visit St. Thomas Aquinas by accident, you know. And St. Clair just wasn't born in Assisi at the same time as St. Francis of Assisi. No, God knows what he's doing. So the point is, this whole concept that the only place you can learn your faith, or the only place you can get the proper devotions is in a Catholic school, is garbage. That, again, the point I'm making is, what is correct about a Catholic school, the proper devotion, the proper attitude, the proper doctrine, can be taught in a number of places, including home, including secular schools. However, uniquely bad is there. My nephews, my niece, are varying different degrees of Catholic, certainly not what I would like, because I, like a lot of people, saw them going to a Catholic school. I was very interested in their books, and I thought they were terrible. But I always figured the teachers were telling them the real stuff in class. And then I find out when they're 21, they never were taught you have to go to Mass. It's pretty hard to get somebody who's been sleeping in for 21 years to suddenly start finding that his uncle is going to tell him the truth when a nun didn't. Now, that doesn't mean to say I can't make the argument, but the inclinations, all we have, again, each person is responsible individually for his own activities, but it doesn't mean we don't have the obligation to set a good example and the obligation to avoid scandal and the obligation to instruct. As I said before, I'm going to stand up, you know, if 50,000 people get into heaven and say, well, Vin gave me good instruction, but I go to hell, isn't going to do me any good. But the fact that I gave them instruction, even if they go to hell, will do me good. We still have that obligation. Another thing which I find very interesting about Catholic education is it is what I call sterile money. You literally give money to people, and some places a significant amount, so that they can teach your children what your children would learn anyway if they wanted to. Now, the point is, this money is what I call sterile because it doesn't do any material or spiritual good automatically. We all know we have an obligation to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, that type of stuff. All right, well, very obviously, if you give money to a hungry person so he can eat, corporal work of mercy, no doubt whatsoever, okay? Good thing. Every dollar that is spent on tuition at a Catholic college cannot be spent feeding a person. Now, it doesn't mean to say that it's wrong to spend money on education and books, but I think there's, again, the concept of prudence comes in at a certain where. If you've got a library that's, you know, choking your house and your kids are running around shoeless, you've got it wrong. Because, quite frankly, you know, as I point out all the time to Protestants, people got to heaven before the Bible was written. You don't even need that, okay? Now, as I say, sometimes I consider this recreation and I'm allowed to prudently recreate, and that's all right, you know, too. And it certainly is a good thing to study the faith, and it certainly is a certain good thing to vote, and there's nothing wrong with publishing books, and gee, these are perfectly legitimate functions. But at what point do you draw a line between what is primarily sterile and what is not? Like a lot of times people try to send me things, and I say, don't bother, I'm not interested. Why? Isn't this a significant factor? Like, a guy wanted to send me a book the other day for him on the end times, and he says, you can publish all this stuff. I said, I'm apologetic, I'm an evangelist. I try to teach people how to defend the faith. I'm not denying the value of this, but it's not for me. And he says, don't you care? And I said, well, tell me, are the conditions for salvation going to be different at the end of the world than they are now? No. I said, then I'll get the right information from God directly if I don't read a book. I'm no more worried about dying at the end of the world than I am next Thursday. I'm worried about both of them, but the conditions aren't going to change. So at a certain point, does this not become more of an intellectual hobby? It can. I have no criticism for a man who collects stamps. There's nothing wrong with that. And a man who becomes a fanatic on stamp collecting, again, as long as he takes care of his family, it's a perfectly legitimate hobby. There are religious hobbies which are also legitimate, absolutely. But when we start emphasizing that, and this is primarily sterile because stamps don't feed anybody either, then you have to look at it a little more prudently. Also, by the same token, as an example, when the University of so-called Notre Dame gave an honorary degree to Patrick Moynihan, my senator, and I think Phil Donahue not so long ago as a valued alumnus, well then what we have is a situation where this open and complete horror scandal. Now again, does that really prevent anybody from coming into the church? No, because nothing prevents anybody from coming into church with their own will. But we have the obligation to bear witness to the world and be as attractive as possible. I mean, just to put it on a simple level, I think a wife has an obligation to be attractive to her husband. And I mean, she really should be. That's what she's supposed to do, is to please him in that sense. And the husband has an obligation to please the wife, which means you're not to spend money on cosmetics and stuff like that. That's perfectly legitimate. Well, can you hate your wife if she's not attractive? No, but she should make it easier. The same way the University of Notre Dame should make it easier for people to find Catholicism attractive by not rewarding these pro-death politicians. That could not happen. If it was the University of Wisconsin or the University of Iowa, none of us would be upset. I mean, not in the same sense that we're upset now, because what do you expect from the University of Iowa? What do you expect from the University of Wisconsin? There's also another point, and Jerry and I discussed this briefly, just the question, and I think it was evident on this handout, can you be a good Catholic and a good American these days? Not in my opinion, okay? Not as we understand American, because an American is a guy who willingly pays taxes so the government can go out and kill children and hand out condoms and teach people that, there are no values. Well, that's what's being taught and being jammed down people's throats. Now, thank God that homeschooling is catching on and is getting more and more permissive, because as I used to point out in the old days, try to teach your kid your own way and they'll come with the power of the state, put a gun to your head, and if you resist, kill you, to put your kid in a public school where he's taught things you don't want. And if you know what's going on in New York City right now, you realize the problems up there with this pro-homosexual teaching, where the local school boards are refusing, and now they're firing the local school boards, which was exactly the whole point of multiculturalism, to allow each local school board. The point I'm trying to make is that anytime you cooperate with the government, and the government is essentially evil because it's part of the world, you compromise. The Catholic school system that I remember a long time ago, it struck in my mind, the history book had a letter from the captain of the Yorktown aircraft carrier before it went down with him on. And the letter was to his son. And the letter said, remember, if you're a good Catholic, you'll always be a good American. Well, I mean, that stuck in my mind. And what I'm thinking is, why did he do that? Because they had to get certification in that grammar school from the government. So they throw these patriotic things in, about all the good things, one side or the other, on the Civil War. It seems like every war we fought was justified. No Catholic theory of justification, just straight old patriotic Americanism, okay? And no great interest on truth, no great interest on values, no great interest on, God's never mentioned in a history book, which is sort of an interesting concept. And they have to do that. They have to sort of keep religion in the side and go the other way in order to get government certification. And in order to do that, I think they teach a false patriotism. And that false patriotism, once again, comes under the issue of Catholicism. I mean, I was at Mass today at Christendom, and fine, here's the papal flag, but here's the American flag. I'm not sure the American flag should be there. I mean, that blood is aborted babies. My government takes money at the point of guns from me and from you to pay women to kill their children. That's what Medicaid does at state level. Well, gee whiz, this is Nazi Germany again. This is Stalin's Russia. Well, what's the difference? Why have we got that flag up there? I have no... it's funny, when I'm in situations, sometimes I substitute babysit. You don't substitute teach in public schools. You go and take names and hope you survive. And they say the Pledge of Allegiance, and if the students stand up, I stand up. And if they put their hand over their chest, I put their hand over their chest. And if they say something, I just move my mouth. I don't want to get scandalized. But I can't pledge allegiance to this nation anymore. But that's what they taught in public schools. I think that, again, there's a perfectly legitimate form of patriotism, and America has a lot of good things about it. Unfortunately, it has a lot of bad things about it, too. But the point is, the American school system, both public and private, teaches somehow that it was totally legitimate. I mean, I thought it was very interesting. And they asked the English subject how their textbooks handled the American Revolution. They said, we sort of skip over it. But from their book, George Washington was a traitor, and Benedict Arnold was a hero. We call Benedict Arnold a traitor, you know, and George Washington is a hero. That's not to denigrate the individuals involved, but the point is that's automatic. That's defined. That's like in the dictionary, hero. Here's a picture of George Washington, traitor, here's a picture of Benedict Arnold. The free inquiry is not allowed of thinking whether Benedict Arnold was actually justified in following out a higher loyalty to a government that he took an oath to that George Washington broke. Well, gee whiz. Again, I'm not making the point, but what I'm saying is there is no free inquiry in this system. People who think it is are crazy. I really think people don't understand that the culture of America is such a massive, overwhelming force that we grow up thinking democracy is automatically good. We think majority rule has something sacrosanct about it. We think there's something good about divided powers in a government. We think there's something good about the way that, you know, that whenever democracy is spread through the world, this is better. I'll get to you in a moment. A friend of mine in Hungary is there now. And he was there when the changes are going on, sort of the tail end of them. And I said, how are things? And he said, they're getting just like us, materialistic. It's worse. And there's a semi-famous Catholic in New York area, and I was invited to a dinner party with him once. And he got so enraged, he stood out in the cold New York winter on a balcony rather than be in the same room with me. And what I said was that maybe what's replacing communism in Central Europe is worse. I'm the most anti-communist person in the world. Absolutely none. I mean, I don't know. Nobody's worse than I am. Phil Donahue, when he has his friend Val Posner, whatever his name was on the show, he always says the same thing to the callers. What should we do with him? He's a communist. Should we just shoot him? I'd always say, yes, all communists deserve to die automatically. I mean, that's like cockroaches. The same thing. Just kill them automatically. They forfeited their right to live. They, abortionists, a few others, okay? But the point is, as I said to this guy, what matters is the numbers of souls that get to heaven. Under persecution, maybe the church can thrive. Maybe these people will become martyrs. Maybe they'll get the Mass once a year and it'll be real, rather than going to Mass 52 times a week and not paying any attention. Maybe they'll be so afraid they won't get to confess their sins, they won't commit any. I said, then they go to heaven, then communism is God's will. But if we replace communism with pornography, materialism, sexualism, divorce, all of this nonsense that goes on, rampant racial prejudice, then it's worse. Because the only thing that matters is people getting to heaven. Well, he accused me of being a pro-communist. And I said, no, I'm only judging things from the point of view of salvation. It appears to me, from what I've read in schools, in Catholic schools, nothing is ever presented that the more souls saved, the better. Which is the ultimate test of right and wrong. The Catholic school system is a public school system with tinges of Catholicism at times, frequently heresy, and as I say, it really comes down to this. The uniquely evil things it can be done by no other force. The uniquely good, there's nothing unique in its goodness, which can always be done by others. We rightly feel the revulsion of incest as being, even if it were consensual, on the level of forcible rape. Why? Because what a father can do to a child is much worse than what an adult can do to a child, even if there's no physical injuries, because of the relationship involved. When the relationship is, this is Holy Mother Church, you know, delegating nuns and priests and brothers to teach you things, then this is it. And I just make one anecdotal story, which, you know, as I said before, Jerry asked me a while back, how did I get interested, or what was I before this? And I said, I was a fanatical Catholic. I mean, to the world I was. I went to Mass every Sunday, didn't miss, went on holy days and obligations when I remembered, otherwise I honestly forgot, and occasionally would sign a petition against abortion, give money in the collection basket, and occasionally even actually let Catholicism influence my behavior. Imagine that, okay? And so to the world, I was a fanatic. I mean, true fanatic. They thought I was incredibly fanatical. And yet, here I was in junior or senior year of my Catholic, and this was the best Catholic high school in New York City, Cardinal Spellman. And a friend of mine said, they're teaching now that Jesus didn't know who he was until later on in his life, that he became God and only realized it later. And instead of me saying, how stupid, or you're joking, I was saying, that's an interesting point of view. And I was thinking that after essentially 12 years of rigid Catholic education, I wasn't smart enough to recognize one of the most pernicious and stupid heresies immediately, but accepted it as a sort of, oh, gee, that's an interesting idea. And I remember when I used to hear about the problems with the Dutch bishops, I was always thinking, oh, well, Dutch Catholics just have a different point of view than we do. You know, why are they getting upset over this? Instead of realizing how important dogmatic faith was. I know, but here I was going to Mass on Sunday still, because the rituals have been pointed into me, but not the living faith. I go back to it all the time. The Protestants frequently have much better language than we do, and it's unfortunate. The liberals have stolen so many words from us, like peace, love, community, justice, which are perfectly legitimate words which we're afraid to use. And the Protestants have stolen, or they use them, their personal relationship with Jesus. And I always find it amusing. People call me, you sound like a Protestant. I think I'm the only anti-Protestant in the world. I always point out the Protestants, and nobody persecutes them except for me. I'm the only, that's why we're right. Everybody hates us, but I'm the only one who hates you for your religion, you know, so... I'm always waiting for them to say that to me. Nobody hates a Protestant for your religion. You do, then. What are your point there? But of course, they talk about personal relationships with Jesus. We're not taught that. We're not really taught the concept of that the devotion leads to a relationship, that the prayer leads to a relationship, that the dogma is not the end point, but the starting point, that the assumption is a fact. But after the assumption is the relationship to the Blessed Mother. Not that the fact ever gets less. But that the fact is the starting point. This is like a man and a woman get married. You know, when the priest pronounces the words, when they give to each other, okay, fine, now they're married. That's the starting point. That's not the ending point. Now it's a very lengthy relationship. It has every single aspect of human life, personality, physical, you know, love, everything. We seem to stop at the word and the dogma. And we seem to think, like I said, people would have thought I was Joe Fanatical Catholic because I went to Mass every Sunday. I made it a big deal to go to Mass. I went out of my way to go to Mass. I was on the state police. The only times I ever missed Mass was because police wouldn't let me go. And I was on the state police, and we were on roadblocks or something like this, and they were long, and I would call up and say, I'd like to be relieved to go to church. Why? Well, I'm a Catholic. Why? There's other Catholics on the job. I know. I want to go to Mass. Why do you want to go to Mass? I'm supposed to go to Mass. No, I'm not going to let you go. Can't you get somebody to relieve me? Everybody gets a half-hour break. Let me go to Mass. Where do you really want to go? No one would ever believe me that I wanted to go to Mass because most of the state police were Catholic and they were happy for the opportunity not to go to Mass. Now, the point is, I didn't make a big deal over it and quit, which maybe I should have done, and walk off or something. No, I said, well... got an excuse not to go. See, but the point is, the mere fact that I asked troubled them. They didn't understand that type of fanaticism. A fanaticism which now I would consider the most slightly tinged warm element of lukewarm. You understand? At any rate, the point I'm trying to... The real summary statement comes down to, I think it helps weaken families. It helps parents avoid the responsibility of teaching their children. It helps children not look for their parents. And one could argue, of course, that not every parent is going to teach correctly, blah, 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 and this and that. But I also point out, yes, but God is the real parent. And we all have a Jewish mother who never gives up on us. And we all have guardian angels. I think we forget that we live in the supernatural aspect every day. We're by nature supernatural. Everything, God, as I say, God's got nothing else to do with make everything work for each one of us individually, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off. He will arrange, if you're interested, if you desire, to find out exactly what you need to know to get to heaven, and the rest of the stuff, what difference does it make? You know, if it's not necessary to go to heaven, then it's a hobby. You'll want to find it out? Fine. And the thing is that, the Catholic Church can work against it. It's like the crooked policeman. I used to work with prisoners, and what I found is the prisoners never had a problem with an honest policeman at all, even though they were sort of an open antagonism. What they had problems with was the crooked policeman, who they hated intensely. Because the policeman was betraying his oath. The same thing, like I said, about incest. It's the betrayal of the relationship. And I think also, by the same token, and I don't know, but it seems to me that Catholic education does not teach education, but also something I'd like to point out, because I found out just the other day, I think it was 1438 before the first seminary was set up in a diocese. We went for roughly 1,500 years without a diocesan seminary. And anybody who knows the history of the Celtic Church, Catholic Church, in union with Rome, but Celtic, knows that it had virtually no organization. They had bishops. But like a bishop would sit down somewhere, if the monks didn't like it, they'd go find another bishop they liked and get them to ordain them. And everybody floated around, and it was free-floating. And it produced tremendous saints, tremendous works of theology. It functioned. And I think that part of that is we somehow think that the church after the Council of Trent, which is all we really know, I mean, you know, we traditionalists are showing to go back to Trent. I sometimes think that maybe we have to go earlier than that. And that to go to a more primitive form of church structure is not to deny the church or the efficacy of the sacraments or anything. But again, I know that when I was younger, it was at least an assumed church law that you had to go to Mass in your parish. Now I know very few Catholics consider that any kind of an obligation at all, because they church shop, just like Protestants do. You go to a church, and if you don't like this priest, and you're fed up with never hearing any doctrine, and you don't like altar girls, you go a couple of miles down the road and find another Catholic church. And the point is, that's the primitive structure it used to be, where essentially you floated around. You sort of had this individual choice each time. And I think we might be better, again, that the rumors I hear of the seminaries, I have no reason to doubt them, is that the homosexuals and who knows what have taken over the seminaries so much to prevent many good Orthodox Catholic men from getting in. What if we, now I've been told by a guy who's supposedly an expert on it, there's like about four or five excellent bishops in this country, somewhere in the Midwest, like North Dakota and Illinois and stuff like that, and their seminaries are overflowing. Well, it appears to me that what is happening is these guys are going there, setting up phony addresses, and then getting into those seminaries when they can. This is really the primitive church again. If we did away with seminaries as we normally do, and just let people follow around St. Augustine, and then when St. Augustine felt it was right, he ordained them, gee, it worked that way for 1,500 years. And the church was terrible then and great then. It produced great saints, it produced terrible saints. I don't see much difference now, except, again, and this I think is always a factor, that sterile money is being spent on an awful lot of paper, an awful lot of books, an awful lot of heating of classrooms, and an awful lot of people sitting listening to words, which they don't necessarily have to know to be saved. And I one of the points I was going to make later, if I ever get to it, is in arguments, why are you always cutting? It was a criticism of you. I noticed in some of your debates you tend to quote church fathers a lot. This is not an election. It doesn't matter how many people are on our side. It only matters what's true. And I think some other Catholic apologists argue this very wrongly all the time. Called Ignatius of Antioch to show that in 107, yes, it was the real presence. Yes, it was the sacrifice of Mass. Yes, it was the Catholic Church. To which an intelligent Protestant would say, who says Ignatius of Antioch was right? That's one individual expressing an individual view. You're not giving him infallibility, are you? Well, no, not really. Then why quote him? If he's right, it's not because he's Ignatius of Antioch. It's because of the words which you also can testify and prove. If he's wrong, it doesn't matter if the world's on his side. I mean, the world thought Jesus wasn't going to rise from the dead, and everybody was very happy to see him crucified. The world isn't always right on these things. And again, just to get back to it, I think that whole concept of democracy and majority rule and the majority's got to be right seeps in to American Catholic education. We have board of directors in colleges and they vote on things. I mean, we've got this whole concept of democracy and the consent of the governed. I mean, again, I think no one really examines the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution from a God point of view, in which case they're horrible, blasphemous statements. The consent of the governed has nothing to do with the authority of the governor. It's the authority of God in a legitimate government which gives the governor the right to enforce just laws. Your consent's got nothing to do with it. Who cares whether you consent or not? I mean, freedom of speech concept says that lies are equal to good. How many people have grown up believing that blasphemous statement of Voltaire is actually something worthy? I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. What I always like to paraphrase it, I would die for a lie. I mean, you think about it all. I mean, again, we don't understand our culture, how much it's influenced us. Everybody's seen it in a Western movie. The good guy catches the bad guy, throws him in jail, and everybody says, let's get our rope and string him up. And they go there, and the brave sheriff stands out there and says, they're not going to have any lynch law in this town. I don't care if I have to shoot you or I'll lose my job, blah, blah, blah. Why not, Sheriff? Because we're going to give him a fair trial first. Then we'll hang him if he's guilty. But don't you know he did it? Doesn't matter whether I know. It doesn't matter whether you know. It matters whether a jury... We got a jury system in this country and, let's wave the flags. Wait a minute. What matters is the guilty gets punished. Why don't we hang this guy? Why wait for the circuit judge to come in? Why waste time feeding him? What are we dealing with here? If he deserves to die, hang him. If he doesn't deserve to die, what's he even doing in jail? What is the mere formality of a bunch of words sworn by people saying, wait a minute, objection, Your Honor, that's irrelevant. No, I got a good point there. What has that got to do with justice? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. But we're so convinced of that we now think that justice is what the procedure is, not the end result. I mean, think about that. We replace the ends with the means. And we teach that in our culture. We teach that man out there shooting down the townspeople who want to hang the rapist is the hero. We teach somehow that the police officer who keeps the Jew from beating up the Nazi is a good man. No, the police officer should be beating up the Nazi for the Jew.
Okay.
I mean, I don't understand it. Why when, you know, I live right in New York City, why was it when the anti-Castro Cubans would assault the Cuban industries, the Cuban embassies, with the police out there pushing the anti-Castro Cubans away? Well, because, you see, it's a diplomatic consequence. Nah, they're evil SOBs. Let's go string them up. And the police should stand aside. And one of the reasons I got in trouble as a police officer is because I used to do this. I used to drive a school bus. And this was my old philosophy was, you know, that this was the kid who bothered everybody in the school bus. I would hold him and let everybody else kick him and punch him. I didn't care. It solved the problem. I says, come here. We should do great. I'll hold him. Now kick him. Oh, that's it. Great. And tomorrow we'll do the same thing. I don't like him either. Hey. That was justice to me. I didn't call parents. I didn't care. And when I was a police officer, I would say the same thing. I'm not enforcing this. Why? It's unjust. Heck with it. Forgive the guy. Yeah. And just one aside, which always struck me, as I remember specifically telling this, it was a family problem with, like, neighbors. I was something sort of nasty. And I said, well, you know, and I'm just sitting there, just in uniform talking. I said, you know, you really should forgive this guy. He said, why? Because Jesus says so. Yeah, but how often? I said, 491 times. I'll come back to 491 times. How often has it been? And they said, but Jesus meant that as a hyperbolic state. I mean, all of a sudden talking theology people. Never did anybody ever call in and say, this loony is out here talking religion. Get somebody out here who's going to enforce the law. And I used to do this a lot. I mean, again, not as often as I should. To the world, I was a fanatic. And I would say, you know, it's a matter of justice. It's a matter of forgiveness. God will hold it in your favor. You get time off in purgatory. And nobody would ever say, well, I don't believe in purgatory. And who are you to enforce your views on me? They would always discuss it rationally, which was always found really just God prepping them. But again, to sort of like summarize or conclude, all of these things do not justify the existence of a Catholic system of education in the formal sense. In the informal sense, I point out again that those who wish to read St. Augustine have been able to read him for over 1,000 years. It takes time. Those who wish to read St. Thomas Aquinas, the same thing, St. Anselm. Those who wish to read the Bible have been able to read the Bible before we had formal schools for it. Now, that does not mean to say that schools won't start up, but it was funny because I'm hoping for rather large success on an advertising campaign. And I have state representatives, and one of the things I do is I print the numbers of my state representatives in my catalog and in my literature, and I say, if you have questions about me, call up. Because I figure they may not like a big, fast-talking New Yorker, but they'll call a fellow guy in Arkansas. And the people have just volunteered, so what I did was prepare sort of a history letter. This is a brief history of ARM. And I said, the best way to think of this is as a school, where people go to learn what they want to learn, take what they want, and leave. And we don't have this ongoing relationship in the sense of where it develops a call for the personality or the rules and regulations or even matriculation. And the point I'm trying to make is, I think that one can have that type of a school relationship with any institution or organization that exists. And if it doesn't, God will put the right person in your place. I was outside of Steubenville, Ohio once, and I picked up a hitchhiker and, you know, on a miserable day and took him like 40 miles. And it turns out he was a fallen away Catholic, and I just brought it up. And I said, you know, what's your relationship with God? And we talked for a long time. I don't know if he came back to the church or not. But the point is, I know that God put me there that day to get him a little back closer because he was having problems. Now, if God can do that for him, and I know he does it for me all the time, well, then he'll do it for anybody who wants to learn. And again, the concept that we really teach as if we're atheists, without having God there. One of the teachers I thought was really put it in context, it was a priest who's dead now, and I thought it was a very interesting point. And it only dawned on me now, you know, 30 years later. But in high school, he said, this is a very hard course. Lots of you will flunk. But don't worry about it. The only thing that really matters is you save your soul. And I thought that was a very good way to put it. And when I used to teach, I said, there are four purposes in this course. One is, at the end, you're a better person. Two is that you've gained knowledge in this course. Three is that you've had a good time. Fourth is that you passed. So actually, you can do 75% of this and still flunk. So don't feel bad because an F is a C+. which is sort of a twist of logic. But the point, exactly the point is, my perfect goal was really to make them better people. And if they weren't better people, I failed as a teacher. I did. And I used to, not always, but sometimes I would have no problems in a secular thing bringing up the entire Fatima message and the fact that it occurred, and that's why you Muslims aren't converted, is because you just don't want to believe your eyes. And sometimes the administrators would say, that's why you dropped out. And I'd say, so what? He didn't want to listen anyway. And they never, you see, again, you think in a secular setting, they won't get away with that. They do. Why? Because I think in secular settings, they're so much afraid of restricting your freedom of religion or freedom of speech that they actually allow more than what would be said of Catholic groups. And I think that's why I argue. I was at a discussion, a forum, they call it. It's a bunch of people who pretend they're Catholics, and they pretend to come together and pretend to discuss things, and then go home and ignore me if I don't leave first in anger. But they brought this whole thing up. But what is the underground church going to do now that Clinton is elected president? Underground church. I mean, these people, as establishment as you can possibly get. There'll never be an underground church in America except the way there is now. Because Americans don't care enough to persecute anybody. We'll never be persecuted. Not as a group. And they said, well, what does this hold for the Catholic educational system? And then they said, well, of course, we all concede it should exist. And I said, no, I don't. And I gave a real summarized version of what I just told you. And they said, does anybody agree with it? And of course, it was 30-1 against me. But a priest who heads a Catholic school said, let me get this straight with you. He said, very, very, very few people send their children to a Catholic school to learn Catholicism or to learn about the faith at all. They send only because it's an alternative to the public school. He says, be realistic, people. Because they were all arguing, well, where else are they going to learn the doctrine? Where else are they going to learn the faith? And that's the point. And I think they're right. I think they're not taught that. One of the women in that group is a teacher in a Catholic school. And again, to the world, she's a very strong Catholic. But when I deal with her with the tough issues, like no salvation outside the church and goodwill and truth and related to that, she gets so incredibly vague and confusing, and otherwise she sounds like a computer in logic, because she doesn't want to face the hard issues. Everything's soft and amorphous when it comes to that. Everything's vague. Why? Because I've challenged her in a letter once, and I said, if you talk about me behind my back, I don't mind that. If you criticize me behind my back, I don't mind that either. But you are now on notice that you have to confront me exactly what I'm doing wrong by next meeting, because you have to care enough about me, and don't tell me you're busy. Because she had listened to the tape that I had with a debate with another apologist. And she said, she thought the other guy won. And I said, fine, tell me where. And she says, well, I'll get around to it. 4 years later. She still hadn't got around to it. And she said, why? Well, I got children, I got this and that. And I said, I got a job. I said, okay, fine. But when she started criticizing me again, I said, I'm more important than your children. Because I'm not dealing with, you're dealing with my soul and your soul, and your children act. They're probably not going to die for a long time. Both of us are closer to death. I said, you will either criticize me to my face, completely support me from now on, in which I will be able to say you're an absolute 100% unqualified supporter, or you will never again in my presence call yourself a Catholic, justifiably. And she got I sent the letter out to four people. One, interestingly enough, was a priest who then dropped out of the group rather than face me, which I was very pleased with. One is a guy who heads the Hebrew Catholic Association, which believes that Jews should have a special right in the church. He called me. A teacher of American history who I'm close friends with, who at least wrote me and deals with me at times, and this woman who did nothing. And the next time we met, she says, you know, I've been meaning to get to you. And I said, you are no longer a Catholic, you are no longer a Christian, and I'm deadly serious. She looked at me and I said, don't even call yourself that anymore. You don't have the qualifications. You don't care about your fellow man who's reaching out to you with help. This is exactly the way I phrased the letter. Like I said, it's part of this whole thing. People don't have choices with me. I don't allow them choices. I don't allow them choices. You either support me or you damn me. But you damn me to my face so that I won't go to hell. Because as it says in Ezekiel, son of man, if you warn a man of his sin and he goes further, his guilt is on him. But if you don't warn him and he sins further, his guilt is on you. And I live by that. And I point out, if you think I'm wrong, you've got no choice at all. I don't allow it. I always give, you know, my name and telephone number and I say, get in touch with me. And don't tell me later, well, you know, I mean, some things are actually work good, some things are actually bad. What's bad? I'm, well, I haven't got time now. You'll have lots of time in hell to discuss it with my other friends. That's where you're all going. Okay, you had a question, I'm sorry.
Oh,
This is where I'll end the tape. I believe it's a natural break, and certainly I have dealt with the issue of Catholic schooling as opposed to Catholic education. I should draw a distinction there. Catholic education, which means modification of one's behavior by the inculcation of principles and values into a person, is essential. Catholic schooling, by which I mean the restriction of certain people to meet certain standards, criterion, and behavior patterns of an institution, is quite a separate matter. Very frequently, schooling takes place without any education, and education takes place without any schooling. It would be a wonderful world if all schooling did actually lead to education. I would like again to officially thank Jerry Matatix for extending his time, effort, and, shall I say, hospitality in having me down and giving me the opportunity to comment as I did. There is one tape which deals, in a sense, with a related issue on this. This is what I call the Very Mara-y Christmas. It is a question and answer session that took place at the home of Dr. William Mara, senior editor of the magazine Latin Mass, also director of Roman Forum, and a Catholic philosopher and intellectual. During the tape recording of the Christmas party, which took place in December of 1992 at his house, the issue of Catholic educational institutions was raised, and Dr. Mara presented a view which was somewhat different from mine, and I believe if you have any further desire to pursue the subject, that you obtain that tape and listen to it. That tape and additional copies of this tape may be obtained by contacting us at ARM 55 Palen, that's P Paul A L E N Road, number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. I would like to add a postscript at this point that if you wish the entire session, at least what we have of the question and answers that took place on that day, you may also contact us. That is a three-tape set. Part of that, the three-tape set, will be an exact duplication of what you have heard now. We hope that the tape has been of interest and a blessing to you. Thank you for listening.